Hi to all my wonderful followers. I'm sorry about the sound quality. I am outside. I'm recording on my phone and I'm also wearing a mask to make sure I don't get sick or anything like that. So yeah, I apologise in advance. You're going to hear people walking around, dogs barking, children playing and all that jazz. It's kind of busy just now. There's people walking along the beach and there's a lot of doggies, which I absolutely adore. I will try not to get distracted and start petting them and forget what I'm talking about. But yeah, I can't promise anything. There's a lot of doggies here today, which I adore. So for my 800 followers celebration, I got this really good idea to go to an iconic Scottish location and tell a few folklore stories. So right now I am currently at the coast. I'm in the beautiful little town of Largs. And yeah, it's a little bit busy today. There's people on the beach, people walking dogs and stuff like that. So I'm trying to keep my distance and make sure that no one sort of realises what I'm doing. So yeah, for anyone that doesn't know about Largs, Largs is a tiny little town on the coast of Scotland that was invaded by the Vikings very long ago. So I am currently sitting next to a humongous iron statue of a Viking. His name is Magnus and he lives on the beach and he also has a COVID mask on. Someone's climbed up and put a mask on him because, you know, it doesn't discriminate. I mean, statues can probably get it too. So I've been asked to do a couple of things. Like the most gory folklore that I can find. So I have a few stories here. So Scotland has a rich history of folklore. There's all different types of stories from all over the country. But since I am in a place called Ayrshire, I thought I would do my first one about something that happened in Ayrshire. So this is the story of Swanny Bean, Scotland's most famous cannibal. So we've all heard about Hannibal Lecter. We know that he is like fictional, but you haven't really heard of Swanny Bean a bit. So Swanny Bean was a regular guy. He was born in East Lothian in the late 15th century. And he was a tanner. But when he got married, he moved to Ayrshire. So him and his wife set up a home at Benin Cave in Ballantrae in Ayrshire. And Benin Cave was a huge cave, loads of tunnels built into like solid rock. Apparently extending for more than a mile in length. And it also featured like loads of little side passages. They lived there for about 25 years. And they had a bunch of kids. It's not really known exactly how many kids they had, but there were fucking hundreds of them. So the cave's entrance was flooded with several meters twice a day, high tide and all that, sort of helping them to stay hidden. That's the way they wanted it, that's the way they kept it. So living in this cave, it is rather difficult to make a living. So to support his wife and his growing family, Swanee decided that the best way forward would be just to, you know, like, rob people wandering around, getting close to their territory. It proved that he could ambush travellers on the very narrow roads that connected the villages in the area. Then they sort of realised that, well, I can rob these people, but they'll just run to the next village. So he decided that the best way to deal with this would just get rid of them. No witnesses, no one could tell on them. So to avoid, like, being seen, they wanted to stay hidden as much as possible and stop going to, like, neighbouring villages to get supplies and stuff like that. They got the idea to start eating anyone and everyone that came close to them. So they became cannibals. They sort of figured that this would be the best way to be. It's like a good protein diet. They've got loads to keep them sustenance. Loads of sustenance. They didn't really have to do any of that. And then the babies started coming. There is believed that there was about 14 in total, but it's never really been confirmed. So they were brought up on human flesh. They developed a taste for it when their mother was pregnant, and that was all they really had to eat, and that's what they were happy eating. They didn't know any different. So over the following two decades, they all became rather talented at murdering and skinning and robbing people. They became very good at salting and salting and pickling the flesh, and they've got a little sloppy because of the high tide in that. Some of the things had started to wash up on the neighbouring shores. So this is when the police and the local townsmen sort of realised, like, there's something not right here going on. And what is believed to be this day the longest missing persons list ever produced in Scotland. They carried out mass searches of the area, trying to locate people or their murderers, but no one ever thought to search the depths of the cave. So as the years went by, the family grew older, fixed a high protein diet, bigger, and the family, so did their appetite. As many as a half a dozen victims would be ambushed and killed at a time in military-style operations. The bodies were taken back to the cave, carefully prepared by the women, the mother and the daughters of the family. But even though they developed a trade, they got better at what they'd done, they still made accidents. One evening, the family had attacked a man and his wife. One group pulled the woman from her horse and had her stripped and disemboweled before the other group had a chance to wrestle the man to the ground. Realising his fate, he fought desperately to escape, driving his horse into and over the family. As he fought for his life, a group of 20 or so people returning from a fair happened upon the scene, and after a violent confrontation they overpowered the family. It was the first time ever that they had been sort of taken on. They were a number disadvantage, and that just sent them running. So they try to retreat back to their house, but of course they quickly followed them. So they left the scene, a man and his horse try to fight to get away, and a disemboweled woman. So they chased after them, and they eventually caught Swanee. He was taken before the chief magistrate of Glasgow, who, after hearing the tale, put together the longest list of people and the many reports of the pickled body parts, and decided to take matters straight to King James I, who had just arrived in Ayrshire with a small army. The small army of about a couple of hundred men and dogs, together with a band of local volunteers, launched one of the biggest manhunts the country has ever seen. Like before, the search extended through the Ayrshire countryside, the coastline, but nothing was discovered. That was until the dogs picked up the scent of decaying human flesh while passing a partly waterlogged cave. By torchlight, they entered the cave with swords drawn, and they proceeded down the mile-long, twisting passage of the inner depths of the family lair. Nothing could have prepared them for what they saw. The whole of the cave had limbs and body parts hanging on meat hooks. There was just piles of clothes, piles of other parts of bodies, jewels, watches, anything of value, and heaps of bones. But after this, of course, the entire family, which had now grown to around 48, it is believed, after children and parents continued to have children and breed, they were arrested and taken to Edinburgh by King James I himself. The crimes were considered so heinous that the normal justice system, for which Scotland is so renowned, was abandoned, and the entire family was sentenced to death the following day. 27 of the men of the family met their fate similar to how many of their victims did, by having their arms and legs cut off and being left to slowly bleed to death, watched by their women. The 21 women were burned like witches in huge fires. This has influenced a lot of cannibal stories. But yeah, this lovely tale started off in Scotland. How cool is that? So that's a pretty dark one. So I thought I would go on to some of the nicer ones. We do have some very nice ones here. I do apologise for all the dogs barking, but they're cute, so I'll allow it. We have so many different ones, it's sort of hard to pick a few of our folklore. My favourite one, however, is the Kelpie, which is a mythical water spirit that can shapeshift. Traditionally, a Kelpie is a horse, and that's how they appear to people who see them, as horses that are just magical and whimsical and beautiful. They have also been known, however, to use their shape-shifting abilities to appear as women in streams and stuff like that. The Kelpie, being water guardians, they are known to live in the seas, the lochs, the lakes, everything across Scotland. There basically isn't a body of water that doesn't have a story of a Kelpie behind it. So from Loch Ness to Loch Lomond to Loch Tom to the River Clyde, the River Fife, everyone has a story. And they are beautiful. Along the motorway, there is a huge statue of two Kelpies, which I will include in this audio for people to see. They're beautiful big horse heads that change colours. So I'll talk to you a little bit about the Stourworm, or the Maester Stourworm. It was a gigantic evil sea serpent in Arcadian folklore, capable of contaminating plants and destroying animals, humans, with its putrid breath. It is a folklore from Orkney, which is one of the islands up the coast of Scotland. But legend has it that every Saturday at sunrise, the Stourworm would awake, open his cavernous mouth and yawn 9 times. He would then demand a meal of 7 virgins. Although he was a venomous beast, he had a dainty taste. The king of one of the counties threatened by the beast's arrival would advise to be offered a weekly sacrifice of 7 virgins. In desperation, the king eventually issued a proclamation offering his kingdom, his daughter's hand in marriage, and a magic sword to anyone who could destroy the monster. Asipato, the youngest son of the local farmer, defeated the creature. As it died, its teeth fell out to become the island of Orkney, Shetland, and the Faroes, and its body became Iceland. It is noted that the slaying of the dragon by Asipit is not dissimilar to the tales, to other tales of this genre. The reason this is believed to be that the stories took shape during a period of enlightenment where human sacrifices to giant beasts and monsters began to spread. I'll do a few more of these. I'll leave some of them in case you guys want this another time. So I'll tell you about the Ghost Piper of Clanyard Bay. The Ghost Piper of Clanyard Bay. The unmistakable blast of bagpipes is a common sound in Scotland, particularly in the cities at festivals and celebrations. But what happens when the piper himself vanishes out of thin air? There are several stories of phantom pipers throughout Scottish history and folklore. In days gone by, a dark network of tunnels was said to extend from the Cove of Grenin to the cliffs of Clanyard Bay near Stranraer. Locals believed that fairies lived in these tunnels and caves, and no one dared go inside and disturb them until one day a piper boldly entered the caves. He played his pipes loudly, accompanied by his faithful brown dog. The music droned on for hours, slowly fading away until it couldn't be heard inside. Suddenly the dog ran out of the caves, terrified and howling without any of its hair, and the piper was never seen again. Although the caves are now long gone, on summer nights, passers-by have heard the distant sound of bagpipes coming from deep underground. There is many stories of ghosts and other things in Scotland. We're quite well known for it. In another video, I may talk about some of the ghost stories that we have in Edinburgh and my experience with one of the ghosts when I went and saw this specific ghost tour in Edinburgh. So the last one I'm going to talk about today in this audio is the Gorbals Vampire. So in the 1950s, the Gorbals area of Glasgow was being terrorised. Stories had been circulating in the Gorbals witnessing children believed to be killed. The culprit was said to be a 7-foot vampire with iron teeth lurking in the southern necropolises. Of course the adults didn't believe these children, so the kids decided to deal with the monster once and for all by themselves. So in 1954, hundreds of young kids from the Gorbals area swarmed into the creepy necropolis's graveyard. The police were called, but they couldn't move the children. It took the local head teacher to finally disperse the crowd. Local historians believe that the mass panic stemmed from the legend of Jenny with the Iron Teeth, a murderous ghost said to haunt Glasgow Green. And at the time, there was also an American comic book entitled The Vampire with the Iron Teeth. After the stories appeared in the local press, it gained worldwide coverage. An unlikely alliance of Christians, communists, and the National Union of Teachers blamed imported American horror comic books for the mass hysteria. The campaign ultimately reached Parliament, resulting in the 1955 Children and Young Persons Harmful Publications Act, which still stands in Scotland to this day. A stage play and a graphic novel have told the stories of the Gorbals vampire, and a large mural of the beast guards at the local railway arch, where it still stands to this day. So yeah, a little mini story about some of our wonderful, rich folklore here in Scotland. So I will think of some more. If you guys want another one, let me know in the comments below. There is plenty of ghost stories, plenty of nice ones about fairies as well. I swear it's not all doom and gloom. But I will also take a few pictures of what I'm looking at, the sea and the islands around me are absolutely beautiful from where I'm sitting, despite it being such a cloudy, not very nice day. And of course Magnus with his mask on. But yeah, you guys take care, and I will talk to you guys soon.